Hey, welcome to Your Turn. Mike Causey here. Delighted to have you with us. Going to be talking today with Carol Bonacero. She's president of the Senior Executives Association. And everybody in government, you either are a senior executive or more likely you work for one. The vast majority are career people, but there are a number of political SES types as well. And we're into the end of a lame duck administration. And so it's going to be interesting times for federal workers, both career and the political, as people move around and whatnot. Carol, welcome to the show. First off, I wanted to ask you to kind of explain what the Senior Executive Association is and how did you get to be president of it? And, you know, where did you come from?
Oh, my gosh. How much time do we have?
Yes, days and days.
Well, I was in government. I came into government straight from college, worked at what is now OMB. And when the Senior Executive Service was formed, I was at the U.S. Commission on Civil Rights. And after the first year, we all were quite disappointed, having chosen to move in on the basis of how it was described to us and what the features would be. All of those who were in so-called super grade positions, 16, 17, 18, the overwhelming majority, probably 99.9%, agreed to move in. And a number of the features began changing fairly quickly, including how many could receive performance awards, et cetera. And I recall very clearly receiving a letter one day from a group of fellows from the IRS who had formed the Senior Executive Association in response to these concerns about what was happening and saying, well, thank God somebody's doing something. There were seven layers of of management that were all earning the same thing and so on. And it always amazes people that, IRS executives, wild and crazy guys, but they had gone to Scotty Campbell, who was then chair of the Civil Service Commission, who had pressed for the Civil Service Reform Act and said, look, you got us into this and things are changing and they're not good and a lot of people are unhappy. What are you going to do about it? And he said, nothing. Go form an association. Mm-hmm. So I joined. And after a couple of months, the board of directors suddenly looked at each other and said, oh, my God, there are no women on this board. Mm-hmm. And somehow or other, they found me, fortunately, because it's been a wonderful ride.
Well, good. Now, the Senior Executive Service, the career SES, is about, what, 5,000-6,000 people?
Yeah, 6,000. And then if you add in the non-career, you get to around 7,000.
Okay. And the pay range here, I know this is always a bone of contention, but the pay range is like 121,000 and change to 183,000. But the vast majority earn somewhere in between, correct?
That's right. They're more in the vicinity of 163 to 167,000, yeah, something like that.
Okay, good. Now, there are a number of things going on here, and one of them is Washington Post recently had a story in which it said that the American Federation of Government Employees local at the VA or the VA Council or something like that was using official time to set up a hit list of managers, and the idea was to get something on these people, presumably, and then take it to management and say these folks have to go. And you know, there's a lot of he said, she said, that sort of thing. And then Emily Kopp, our Federal News Radio, took a look at that, and the headline in her story, which is, by the way, is featured in today's column. If you want to take, there's a link to it if you want to look at it. But she took a look at this. What's the situation? Where does SEA stand on that? And I should point out, too, we contacted the AFGE, and they said they respectfully declined to, you know, call in or whatnot. They're doing their own investigation of it, but they didn't want to get involved in this. So
yes, well, we did ask them. A chapter which allegedly, and I say allegedly,
yep, exactly,
because at this point we don't know precisely. I mean, we only know what some folks have said, had a meeting with Secretary McDonald and complained about managers, executives, presumably, and in response to McDonald allegedly saying, well, tell me who they are, they went off and compiled a so-called hit list. They provided it to the secretary, is my understanding. We have submitted a FOIA to request a copy, and they also provided it, where it found its way, to Capitol Hill, which God knows they didn't need any more fodder. So we have a number of concerns. I mean, frankly, we don't know if it was compiled on official time. That is a question. We don't know whether, on what basis names were included, or whether those whose names are on the list had any opportunity to respond, although I have heard from one person who apparently believes she is named on the list. The unfortunate part about this is that these folks' names are being put out there, and as this town operates, we know sooner or later it will become public. And so they're being smeared without our really knowing what arguably the concern is. And there were certainly other venues or ways of dealing with the union's concerns.
Right. And the background here, of course, for people may recall, VA was in hot water with politicians and others because of the situation in Arizona. Some employees, some executives allegedly cooking the books to make it look like the wait times weren't as long as they were, to make it appear that veterans had been seen and given treatment when in fact they hadn't. So that's kind of the background to this. And then along comes this. And as you said, it makes its way to Congress, I think a congressman from Florida, and he got into the official time issue. And the reason official time is so important here, if whether it's true or not, the reason it's important, of course, is that these are union officials, elected union employees, who would be working on union business but being paid their regular government salaries. There's always, that's always been a bone of contention, depending on which administration's in power and whatnot. But to be using it for something like that, some members of Congress found troubling. And again, we don't know the truth of it yet.
Well, and this is such a big, complicated story because, for example, as far as I know, there's not one executive who has been fired and successfully charged with having, quote, cooked the books. I mean, I don't know who cooked the books, and I'm not sure that we are aware of anyone yet who's actually been proven to have cooked the books, but I suspect there are. We know that last year Congress passed truly egregious legislation, essentially making VA executives at-will employees. This year, the House has passed a bill to make that true for all VA employees. And now we're in a situation where, interestingly enough, Democrats are pushing back and suddenly realizing that this is not an appropriate way to run a civil service. The president has said he would veto the bill. Where were these people last year?
Yeah.
But, you know, beyond that, Mike, I think there's no doubt about the fact that VA has had enormous challenges. And undoubtedly, not everyone has done a wonderful job there. But as you work to correct those problems and take hold of them and improve performance, I think it's almost inevitable that some people are going to be unhappy. I mean, ideally, you hope everybody from management, top management, all the way down is all in this together. But managers and executives know that it can be tough dealing with a poor performer. And when people are unhappy, obviously, they can grieve, they can charge discrimination. I was reminded as I was driving here this morning of many years ago when the Clinton administration was reinventing government, of a VA hospital director in Ohio who was trying his best to implement the reinventing government goals in his hospital. And had at the time something like 240 grievances filed against him. Now, either he was the world's worst executive, or there were just a whole lot of employees who
240 jerks working
who didn't agree that this was the way to go.
Yeah.
So
Yeah. Well, and of course, the danger in this, too, is making the executives, then later on all VA employees, and then the next logical step is the entire federal government.
Absolutely.
Serving at will. You know, hello, Andrew Jackson, but return to the spoil system. It's certainly probably not going to come to that, but and if it did, and the Democrats won the next election, this is would be a case of the revolution devouring its own children. You know, if you, at some point you're going to lose an election, and then your people, if they were serving at will, you could replace the government. Again, it's not going to happen, but it's troublesome.
Well, of course, it's troubling. You know, I happen to think Secretary McDonald is a good guy, doing his best, and very talented. We don't know who the next person will be, and there are layers of political appointees. And so due process has been built into this system for a reason. And we basically watched a very, very enormous, disheartening first step being taken to dismantle that process. And we know that, you know, as today or yesterday, VA, tomorrow, it could be your agency.
Yeah.
All Congress gets unhappy. They've really gotten so much into the weeds of individual performance without ever standing back, holding hearings, really trying to understand how the performance management system operates. The fact that, for example, it is indeed very easy to fire a senior executive. The rights are very limited. So if they aren't being fired, it's for one of two reasons. Either there's no reason to fire them, or there are leaders who are not willing to take the necessary steps to do that. And that's true all the way down the line with regard to poor performance.
Yeah, you hear this from all manner of managers, is it's not worth it. It's not worth getting into this. Do we need to take a short break here? Yeah, Lauren Larson, our producer, is giving us the sign. Be right back here on federalnewsradio.com, 1500 AM. Hey, welcome back to Your Turn. Mike Causey here. I'm talking with Carol Bonacero. She's president of the Senior Executive Association. And before the break, we were talking about the flap at the VA, whether the union local there was trying to compile a hit list on VA managers for management to take care of. There was action last year in Congress that made VA executives at-will employees. Is that correct?
Yes. Carol?
Okay, meaning
basically,
they could be...
They could be fired and had 7 days to file an appeal with Merit Systems Protection Board. I mean, I don't know how you find an
That's
attorney,
fast, yeah.
get your case together and have it filed in 7 days, but in any event, and then MSPB had 21 days to deal with it, but there was no right of appeal to the full board.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, this to me, this sounds like we're touting an ad for professional liability insurance, but this
oh, absolutely.
Is expensive stuff, right? You get charged and...
Yeah. When I talk to groups, particularly whether they're new SCS or candidates, I always ask them, how many of you have professional liability insurance? And a couple of hands in the room may go up. And then I'll say, how many of you own a home? And a lot of hands go up. And I say, how many of you have fire insurance? All the hands go up.
Okay, I get it.
And I say, you know, you're not going to get through your career without at some point having a need for an attorney. Whether you're going to have a case filed against you or have to go in and talk to the IG, which is an interesting experience in and of itself, and there are different kinds of interviews, et cetera. And it's a no-brainer. You know, we, Senior Executive Association, a number of years ago, got legislation passed that agencies can reimburse up to half of your premium. So why in the world wouldn't you do it? And the worst reason I ever heard, and this was extremely sad because it was someone who, in fact, was in the throes of a case and was spending thousands to defend herself, I asked, why didn't you have insurance? And she said, because I knew I'd never do anything wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Well, in this day and age, that's frankly irrelevant.
Yeah. Yeah, I know someone who spent $1.3 million. You know, once you get called before a congressional committee, they can grind you into dust. And
exactly.
Again, not to do an ad for professional liability insurance, but if you got a fire insurance, maybe you should think about it. The VA thing, the next step, as you said, was some members of Congress want to make everybody at the VA at-will employees so they could be bounced out fairly quickly.
And the House passed the legislation. It's slightly different. They have a little more of an MSPB appeal, but it's essentially at-will employment as well.
Yeah.
And the House did pass the bill.
And the next stop, I would think, the next logical step, given the bad publicity, would be the Internal Revenue Service.
Well, why not,
right?
And the interesting thing about this bill, beyond what it's doing with regard to all other VA employees, is it does a number of things with regard to senior executive service. It extends the probationary period for, all new VA employees, including SES, to 2 years. It forces distributions of SES ratings to allow no more than 10% to receive outstanding and 20% to receive exceeds fully successful. What a way to motivate a workforce, right? It calls for rotating all VA SES every 5 years to not only a new position, but a new program. And I'm trying to wrap my mind around, how do you go from, for example, being an executive on the benefits side to running a hospital?
Yeah.
Most of the hospital directors are fellows of the American College of Healthcare Executives. Mm-hmm. It's just mind-boggling, and all of this without a hearing.
I have seen that happen in a number of fields, including publishing, where they will take a, quote, renaissance man or woman and figure, if you're brilliant at this, you've got to be brilliant at that. None of them have read the book, The Peter Principle, by Dr. Lawrence Peter, where he argues that eventually you will be promoted to your level of incompetence if you keep getting promotions. But, yeah, that's an interesting concept. And the military seems to be getting away from that, by the way.
Yeah, you know, it, and that really segues in a way to something that has interested me of late. As you probably know, the administration has been considering, quote, SES reforms. And one of the things that I've argued strongly for is, look, a lot of what people often talk about requiring rotations, et cetera, and professional development. If you look at the few agencies that actually manage their executive corps well, which means they sit down and think about who's likely to retire, who could use further development, or where could we move some folks around to enhance their experience, et cetera. Where that's done well, interestingly enough, is in, for example, Air Force and Navy.
Of all places.
Of all places. And the only thing I can think of that has led to this is the proximity to the military and the thought that they put into leadership development there.
Well, I know over the years they've talked about it. The State Department does it to some extent, but this military concept of rank in man or rank in person. And in other words, you don't necessarily have to have 35 people under you to be a lieutenant. You can be a lieutenant and supervise an office of two or three. And that's an interesting theory.
Oh, yeah. Well, that was the concept of the senior executive service. But with the abolition of ranks, the old rank CS1 through 6, no one even talks about that anymore. I mean, what we have seen is when the ranks went away, inevitably, especially it started at DOD, there was a need to have a surrogate. So what we see now at a lot of agencies are so-called tiers, three basic tiers, so that you can identify where someone is in the food chain, if you will.
Yeah. I interviewed an Army general, retired, by the way, the other day, and he said I had looked him up, so I know what to talk about. He had looked me up, and he said, "Yes, I see you were in about the time my father was." So that was a moment of reckoning.
Oh dear!
A retired general telling me that, Carol, in your action, your the SEA, I guess you call it a newsletter, or magazine, mm-hmm. bulletin. In the most recent one, you say there's a survey. The OPM took a survey, an employee attitude survey, last year, and some professional groups took a look at it and analyzed it, and you didn't necessarily agree with their conclusions?
Well, we have concerns about the employee viewpoint survey. I mean, let's start with that. It's the data that's collected by OPM, which then the Partnership for Public Service takes and massages and comes up with, quote, the best places to work. Interestingly enough, by the way, as I look at the best places to work, most typically the highest ranking ones have the fewest number of political appointees. But that's another story.
Yes.
In any event, they then analyze this on the basis of, well, what was the satisfaction rate of senior executives versus so-called rank and file? And it was higher. And so the notion was that somehow or other these executives are either disconnected or uh-huh. what have you. But there are some actual reasons for this. I mean, first of all, the survey is reportedly anonymous. And by the way, it is not a random sample
okay.
by any means.
Okay.
It's really a matter of how many people are going to fill it out. And it's somewhere in the vicinity of 50%, 55%. And then OPM does some gyrations to try to project these figures in a way that they're able to do by agency, et cetera. Well, the interesting thing is that that survey does capture your rank and your specific organizational component. So that as agencies are parsing through their data to out of concern for what they can do, they could readily identify an executive who is responding to the survey and the content of his or her survey.
And you better be happy. Huh?
And you better be happy. So I take those results with a grain of salt. And it's also been suggested that some may respond more positively, frankly, in an effort to push their organizational scores higher. I don't take that too seriously because there's only one of them and a whole lot of others who presumably in their organizations who are answering it. But I think that's the danger of taking data without really looking behind it very much and projecting it.
Well, you know, when I read that piece in the action and then I saw your response to it and the letters and whatnot, and I had a flashback to early in my career, and the place I worked was going to do an attitude survey about how people felt about the job. And we were told, let it all hang out, be totally honest. We want nothing but the truth. We can take it. And they said, it's totally anonymous. So, but there were, as you said, there were some key questions, and they would say, how long have you been employed at this period? And what is your position? Well, if you were a columnist who'd been there 17 years, kind of easy to figure out, but you could not fill those out. And, so there were about a dozen of us who just threw the survey away. We thought this is not worth it, and we're not going to perjure ourselves. And we threw it away, right? It's an anonymous survey. In a week to 10 days, each of us was called in individually and said, we have not received your survey yet.
Your
anonymous survey. And so they handed us one, and we filled it out, and everything was coming up roses. Everything was good and whatnot. And that, I mean, I literally lived through that. I could see how those sort of skewed results would happen.
Mm-hmm.
We need to take a short break here of 1500 AM, federalnewsradio.com. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Your Turn. Mike Causey here. I'm talking with Carol Bonacero. She's president of the Senior Executives Association. And Carol, before the show, you and Lauren Larson, our producer, were having an interesting discussion, and you talked about how you got into government. We talked about what happened once you were in government and the SEA and the Civil Rights Commission, but how you got into government as opposed to somewhere else, because you wanted to go, was it Wall Street or Broadway?
Oh, no. Madison Avenue.
Madison Avenue, okay.
Yeah, I had worked on Madison Avenue during the summer, and I had worked for an ad research agency, and I thought that was my future. But in those days, it was very interesting if the big agency, J. Walter Thompson, I got the application and you had to write your biography and analyze print ads, et cetera, et cetera. If you went through all of that and you were hired, if you were a male person,
yeah,
you became a junior account executive. If you were a female person, you became a
secretary. Okay.
You got it.
Yep.
So in any event, a friend of mine at Cornell said, hey, you should take this Federal Service Entrance Exam, and the afternoon portion is called Management Intern Exam. Why not?
Mm-hmm.
So I did, and it was a very interesting experience because for the Management Intern portion, only a third of those who took it would pass,
yeah,
no matter what your score was. Then they sent up a couple of feds to conduct interviews for those who had passed it. So we were interviewed individually, and then we were put in a group and given several scenarios. For example, at one point, your Board of Education discussing X, Y, or Z. And then only a third of those who went through that process were then determined to be management interns. So by the time you got through, you said, wow, this is kind of a big deal.
Yeah.
This is cool. This is hot stuff. And then the offers started coming over the transom from federal agencies. And you suddenly discovered there were places like the Federal Aviation Administration, mm-hmm, or Department of the Navy or wherever. And it was an exposure. I mean, you didn't have to, as folks do today, throw your resume into USA Jobs after you try and search that and figure out if you're qualified. Really was an experience. And then you entered government instead of at a GS-5 as a GS-7. And then there was a wonderful program run by the Brookings Institution where we all from different agencies met each other, participated in small groups and large groups. It was a great introduction to government. And of course, it was the Kennedy years.
Yeah.
So it was very different. But I think it's unfortunate that there's no pathway for the vast majority of college graduates that's legible, if you will,
yeah,
that you can understand what you need, how to get there.
Do you think that would be considered too elitist now by the politicians, although they themselves are all graduates of Harvard or Yale?
The view would probably be, and I confess I'm basing this on the reaction to, for example, the fact that applicants for the senior executive service, at least when they get to the point where they're seriously considered, have to write their executive core qualifications.
Mm-hmm.
And that's considered onerous for people outside,
yeah,
the system. And why can't they just give you a resume? So I suspect the notion that you would have to take an exam, oh my God, why,
mm-hmm,
can't people just give us a resume? But it really, we've got to do a better job at letting college grads know what kind of phenomenal, interesting work there is in the federal government and how rewarding it is, and giving them an easier, not necessarily an easier path to get, a clearer path to,
mm-hmm,
get in. Because we know that they are being courted, at least the elite,
yep,
among them, if you will, by the private sector in ways that government can't match.
Do you think the government's getting people like you anymore or in any great numbers?
You know, I don't know. We have just completed a survey and we're now analyzing the data of senior executives asking them this question with regard to the SES,
mm-hmm,
because we know that so many talented, able GS-14s and 15s when encouraged to apply for prepare themselves for the SES, say, thank you, but I'm not interested. Mm-hmm. I'm perfectly happy. I don't want the extra work. I don't want the possibility of being moved geographically. It's not that much more money, if at all, et cetera. So we are very interested in what those executives think about the quality of the next generation. Who's mm-hmm. coming in? Are we keeping the quality up? And I think that's a very good question about what we're getting in government now.
When you were talking about your introduction to government was making the cut, making the cut, making the cut, and you saw that this was a big deal. And I'm thinking when I started covering the government for the Washington Post, I was assigned the Treasury Department, the Postal Service, and FDA of all things. And the reason was that they were all three in the same budget, so that was it was a bureaucratic decision at the Post to do that. And I thought Treasury Postal turned out to be absolutely fascinating. The Postal Service was and is everywhere. They have all kinds of amazing jobs. They were talking about using V2 rockets to get the mail from New York to Los Angeles, but you know it's there. It's everywhere. The Postal Treasury Department. You have the IRS. You have all the Customs Service. All these fascinating operations and Food and Drug Administration. And I thought I got the three most fascinating agencies. And then I realized if I had been given a different budget, Health and Human Services, Interior, Agriculture, I would have said I got the three most interesting agencies.
Absolutely.
And if you come in at the right level and look at it, you realize that the government, it's not an army of clerks in green eye shades sitting around in a building. It's a fascinating operation. Interior Department, who knew?
And what's not helping this whatsoever is the pounding that federal employees are taking from Congress. Anyone looking at it, just on the basis of what they see in the paper, would think this has got to be the worst place to work in the world, with a whole bunch of incompetent bums who are busy falsifying records and throwing money away. And it's very unfortunate.
Well, and also, too, the federal workers, and you have exceptions, you have rogues, and they're looking at this in the IRS, but by and large, they're carrying out the laws that Congress passed. Congress says, let there be light. And by the way, Justice Department, it's up to you to enforce that.
Well, and the most horrendous example of that is the IRS. Mm-hmm. I mean, their job has gotten harder and harder. And in the meantime, Congress keeps cutting their budget. And, you know, it's the old adage of the beatings will stop when morale improves. Yeah. And it just makes absolutely no sense, given that the agency collects the revenue necessary to run the government.
Well, I was doing a mental comparison the other day of government versus private sector. And go back to the crash, 2007, 2008. And I know a lot of people who took pay cuts during that time. Some of us took 5% pay cuts. I know someone in the publishing business who took a 25% pay cut. Now, 5, most of us can live with. 25, not so much. But there were cuts in between. There were no cuts in the government, you know, and there were no layoffs. So that's the good side. But the downside, as you said, was all during these tough times, management in most places, certainly our management, was giving us an attaboy. Things are going to get better. You're looking good. You're doing well. Whereas contrast that to a government worker, the board of directors and sometimes the CEO himself saying, you know, what a bunch of losers you are, blaming them for everything. It's got to take a toll.
It does. And, you know, we were very pleased that President Obama finally met with Senior Executive Service and gave them an attaboy last December. On the other hand, I can't resist thinking about why didn't he push back at least a bit against that VA legislation last year? I understand the politics of it, and I understand that given what had transpired and how it looked and how it was reported in the media and dealt with by the Congress, that he would have been in an extraordinarily difficult position. It would have been, a veto would have been seen as an anti-veteran act. But he could have expressed some concern about the first case of an at-will provision since the Pendleton Act, and he didn't. And so it's been tough, and that's not what you want from a CEO.
You know, the old expression, timing is everything, really applies to political Washington. We need to take a break here, but when we come back, hold that thought. Come back here on federalnewsradio.com. Welcome back to Your Turn. Mike Causey here, talking with Carol Bonacero. I remind you that all of our shows are archived here on our homepage, so if you want to listen to this again or refer it to a friend, just go to our homepage and hit the Your Turns button, and you can listen to this or other shows. Carol, we were talking about a variety of things before the thing, including the lame duck issue here, at least every 8 years, this is probably rarer than a blue moon, but you have a two-term president who is by definition a lame duck. Less than 2 years to go in this administration. I can see it in federal agencies. The top management is changing fairly often now as people go out and look for jobs or get jobs, and people who want some Washington background on their resumes come in to get federal jobs. Is this a tough time for federal workers, career executives?
Well, I think it will become more so as time goes on. And what I was thinking about the other day was when we moved to the Obama administration, mm-hmm. at that time we did a seminar for a day or two on transitioning, and we did it because I had looked at the data and was extremely surprised to see that given the amount of time that the executive career executives as a whole had been in SES positions, that point more than half of them had never been through a presidential transition. Uh-huh. I said it would be a really good idea to afford them an opportunity, those who hadn't been, obviously, to think about and talk about what that's like and what you're contending with. I mean, obviously, at the SES level, most are working for political appointees, and if they haven't been prepared for it, they have to get prepared for how you deal with adjusting to a new one. I mean, how you brief them, how you learn their style, how you get the opportunity or don't to convince them that you're there to make them successful. But it is a whole other experience to go through the presidential transition. So, and as we know, there are going to be a lot more folks as time goes by leaving. So,
because whether even if the Democrats win the next election, there'll still be an almost complete turnover. Everybody wants his or her own team in there and whatnot.
Well, and for those executives who end up in acting positions, they're in a tough job because they have to keep things moving, and yet there's a limit to how much they can move them in the absence of political decisions about where the administration wants to go. So it's not an easy position to be in, and especially in this day and age when you're expected to innovate, but you darn well better not make a mistake or have something fail, because the scrutiny is just horrendous these days.
Well, and you said something interesting. I think all of us, we assume a political change, Democrat to Republican, Republican to Democrat, and it's philosophical, but it is also a personality issue. I call them bosses who have meetings sitting down versus bosses who have meetings standing up. And there are some people who take great offense. One thinks one is inefficient. The other thinks one is you're being a martinet.
Absolutely.
But it's a personality thing as much as anything else.
Absolutely. They come in with different styles. They have different agendas. And We have something on our website called the Political Appointees Challenge, Making the Career Political Relationship Successful, words mm-hmm. to that effect, because it is a critical relationship, and a lot of them come in and don't realize that they need these folks to help them to succeed. And on the other side of the equation, career executives sometimes have a tough road to hoe trying to make that relationship work well. But every one of them comes in with, and they will have a different style or a different agenda. So you have to get used to that and learn how to navigate it.
It always intrigued me, and I saw this with Republicans and Democrats. And sometimes there's a bigger contrast if somebody comes in with an anti-government, anti-bureaucrat agenda. But how many of these people, cabinet secretaries and whatnot, and I've had several tell me this, or show you, but they'll come in and they'll say, you know, these are the best people I've ever worked with. I'm not saying this in public as a farewell speech. These are the best people. And many of them will take them with them. If they're going to a job in the private sector, they'll take these top bureaucrats that they maybe...
Even if they come in with a bad attitude about the federal workforce, by the time they leave, most often they're singing their praises. And the trick is to get to that point sooner than later.
Yeah. And when they do come in, when a new team comes in, there can be several transitions, correct? I mean, there can be one boss comes in and then another. So when does this clock start ticking?
Well, and actually, that's interesting because there's something called the get acquainted period in the SES, which prescribes certain things that can and cannot be done in this 120 days. And there are four different get acquainted periods depending upon whether it's the head of the agency, your immediate political supervisor, the person who has the authority to sign off on your rating or remove you. So it is complicated.
Sounds like one of these trial marriage reality shows on TV, except it's not that funny.
Yeah, and because if the appointee comes in determined that they really don't want to work with
Clean
you.
House.
Nothing forces them to do that.
Yeah.
It's just a matter of we wait out the 120 days and then do with you what I wanted to do with you.
Thank you, Carol Bonacero. Thanks for being with us, and we'll get you back on here again. Thanks for tuning into the show. We'll see you here next Wednesday, I hope. Have a good week.